flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
You're now the head of USAID. The head of Doge, Elon Musk, called USAID a criminal organization and added that it is time for it to die. Do you agree with that?
They have basically evolved into an agency that believes that they're not even a U.S. government agency, that they are out, they are a global charity, that they take the taxpayer money and they spend it as a global charity, irrespective of whether it is in the national interest or not in the national interest. One of the most common complaints you will get if you go to embassies around the world from State Department officials and ambassadors and the like is USAID is not only not cooperative, they undermine the work that we're doing in that country. They are supporting programs that upset the host government for whom we're trying to work with on a broader scale and so forth. So they're completely unresponsive. They just don't consider that they work for the U.S. They just think they're a global entity and that their master is the globe and not the United States. And that's not what the statute says, and that's not sustainable.
Well, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has been very busy since his confirmation, and the USAID developments over the last 48 hours. I think a lot of people, there's a lot of people getting really worked up about it, but they didn't know what USAID was before this week. I'm curious as to what our next guest thinks about this move so far. Jim Carafano joins us once again, senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, welcome back. It's always good to have you here.
Yeah, so let me give you a little history lesson. So, look, I'm not against foreign aid. During the Cold War, foreign aid was run by the State Department. And the reason for that was because we were fighting the Soviet Union and we were spending our money to drive outcomes that would help defend us and our allies against the Soviet Union. So if you think of things famously like, for example, the Marshall Plan, that was a program that was run by the State Department. Later on, after the Cold War, we decided to split out grant making from the State Department. And by the way, split out things like, you remember, Voice of America, which used to be run by the State Department. And we spun these off as separate agencies because we were living in a world, you know, where history had ended. We didn't have any enemies. And by having these organizations be relatively independent, you know, we could say to the world, it's not America imposing its will upon you. It's America helping you. Well, two things happened. One is we elected yahoos like Joe Biden, who said, no, the purpose of these agencies isn't to help Americans or to help other people. It's to help us, right, to drive our political agenda. And the other thing that happened is we're actually facing real enemies, and we need to use foreign aid when we use it to help fight our enemies. And so we need to go back to a model in which we've centralized these authorities, just like the military, when it fights wars during World War II, the Army and the Navy and the Air Force didn't all fight separate wars. They fought under one unified command. So for that, so there's good reasons to centralize foreign aid and, to be honest with you, things like voice of America under one centralized authority, because we're facing real enemies in China, Iran, and Russia. But I got to say one other thing. This politicization of aid, people have no idea how bad this has gotten. Now, I'll give you an example. I was talking to an ambassador to the United States who said they spent 90% of their time, 90%, being lectured by the State Department and USAID and all these other things about the Biden political agenda on things like LGBT rights. And 10% of her time on actually doing kind of foreign policy with the U.S. government. So this thing has gotten completely out of control. And the people that are defending USAID have no defense. The reality is look, I talked to Africans. I was in a major meeting with a bunch of Africans, and they said, look, we don't want foreign aid. You know why? Because we never see a nickel. 90% of the money that gets put into these programs gets consumed by the NGOs running the program. And at the end, there's almost no money to actually do the program. So people who are defending these programs, they're either stupid, they're the devil, or literally they are part of the machine that was profiting from these things, because literally these things had devolved into political agendas that were money laundering machines. And that's the truth of American foreign aid. Not everywhere, not everything in Ukraine, not everything with Israel or other places, but a significant portion of this thing was just a money laundering scheme.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano right now. I have so many questions, and I want to do it at a very basic level. I told you this last summer, was it two summers ago? My producer and I, Brad and I, went to the border. And we went to McAllen, Texas, but we also got to go into a Catholic Charities and see up close and personal what Catholic Charities were doing. And I didn't know, like, there's a lot of talk out about Catholic Charities, but I didn't know any of that until I went in and saw it, and then I started researching it afterwards. And having talked to the people within Catholic Charities, those people in there couldn't even really articulate to me in a way that made me feel like this was totally on the up and up. There were just weird ways that things were discussed within that group. And you mentioned NGOs specifically. And I don't think that people listening right now, on the whole, really understand what an NGO is, why they operate, why they exist. Can you tell us from your perspective what an NGO is?
It's supposed to be a non-government organization, which means it's supposed to not be politically affiliated with the government. But
is that what they are?
NGO. Well, but that's kind of the joke. NGOs can take money from government. And these charities took billions of dollars from the U.S. government basically to be the foot soldiers in President Biden's human trafficking network. Basically, we paid them billions of dollars to do the last mile for the cartels. The cartels got into the border, and then we literally took U.S. tax dollars, and we paid billions of dollars to complete that transaction for the cartel and take illegal aliens into the United States. And they massively profited from this. And the whole time they said, oh, we're just doing good. We're helping out the U.S. government. You know, we're helping out these poor migrants. We're just the good people here. And all the time they knew that essentially they were perpetuating the evil of human trafficking, and they were massively profiting from it. So, you know, it just goes to show that you can corrupt anything. Catholic Charities, like I've been in the disaster response business for, like, you know, 30 plus years. Catholic Charities was widely regarded as the most effective and efficient charity in a disaster scenario in the world. If you wanted your money to do good, you wouldn't give it to the Red Cross. You'd give it to Catholic Charities. They have devolved into essentially a leftist money laundering machine.
And really under the radar. That's, I think, less so now.
The tragic thing is it's not under the radar because, you know, much like you and I have been talking about illegal migration and what a disaster is going to be for the 4 years of the Biden administration, people have been talking about this NGO thing for years, and it's all in plain sight. And it's like you know, Inspector Renault in Casablanca. Like, I'm shocked to discover there's gambling going on in this establishment after they hand him his roulette winnings. The reality is that Biden's been getting away with this for years, and we just all turn a blind eye to it. And it's completely appalling.
It's devastating.
And then for these leftists to stand up and say that somehow the administration are the bad guys. Think about this. Basically, what they've said is, Musk is evil. What they basically said is, auditing government spending, providing transparency in government spending, and identifying really egregious behavior that no normal human being would accept is okay, that somehow that's a threat to democracy. That's what they're saying.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano with the Heritage Foundation. So we've got the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, effectively running USAID now. And the NGOs, are they a separate but useful group of organizations to USAID? Do they operate hand in hand? What happens now that Marco Rubio is in charge?
Well, I mean, it's like football teams. I mean, not all teams are created equal. But I got to say, you know, we all complain about the military-industrial complex. What people haven't paid attention to is there is a humanitarian-industrial complex. There are very large NGOs that are making massive amounts of money, mostly coming in from U.S. taxpayers, and all they care is that the money keeps flowing. They don't care about the outcomes. They don't care about the deliverables. All they care is that they make massive amounts of money. There's an association, and it's called the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, or something like that, USGLC, which is like an association of these NGOs. And they get all these retired generals and retired secretaries, and they all talk about how wonderful foreign aid and how great this American humanitarian, you know, impulse is. And, you know, I went and briefed these guys after Trump got elected the first time, and I said, look, you guys have got to change your business model here. This administration is interested on foreign policy that serves America's interests, not like you guys just keep doing whatever you want to do, and as long as you're getting money. And they looked at me and they're like, we don't care. And they literally spent 4 years fighting Trump on this, and they just kept doing exactly what they're doing. And now what's happened is Trump has come back. He knows what he's doing, and he's seen this game before, and he is not going to let them get away with this. And I just think they're a bunch of crooks.
Yeah, it's what it looks like. Last question. It's kind of the bring it all back to home question. If Marco Rubio takes over USAID, I don't know if they've got to burn the whole thing down and build something back up. Can the United States of America still be a charitable, giving country without the systems in place that are currently in place right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact is there are actually a lot of very competent people in the Trump administration or who have worked with Donald Trump who know exactly how to do foreign aid in a way that focuses on outcomes and not making NGOs rich and not rewarding political friends. And they know how to do their job, and they can do their job. And there's lots of ways to deliver foreign aid. But, you know, the funny thing is most of the world doesn't really want our foreign aid. They really, really don't. What they want is they want investment in their countries. And so mostly what they really want is they want companies to come in and invest in their countries. And this foreign aid thing is actually, it does more harm than good. It's like a lot of times foreign, not every bit, don't get me wrong. I mean, there were definitely things like, you know, like PEPFAR, for example, that helped eliminate AIDS crisis in Africa. There are good programs. I'm not saying that. But a lot of these things are like parents who give their kids crack, you know, because they want to help their kids. It's just not working. Making people addicted to, you know, and the other thing is the money that does go into the country in these big programs, a lot of times it goes into the hands of oligarchs who just keep the money. And you know the one of the biggest recipients of American foreign aid? George Soros' Open Society Foundation. So much of this money is funneled directly into those groups and their projects, which have a foreign policy all their own, which is not aligned with the United States.
Right. Bringing it all into the light. That's what it seems like is happening right now. And sometimes I look and I just feel like all the right people are really, really upset right now. It's kind of one of the ways to judge about it. Jim, thank you. We appreciate you. We look forward to having you back again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Jim Carafano, Senior Counselor to the President and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation on X at JJ Carafano. go follow him. Tell him thanks for coming on the show. He's so great to us. All right. Droy Murdoch, usually a Wednesday. It's not Wednesday, but we're moving him up a day here. Who do we have next? Who do we have tomorrow at 105?
Senator Schmidt.
Okay, that's right. Senator Eric Schmidt. We asked him to come on the show. We were always asking him to come on the show. And he could come on at Droy's time. And it turned out Droy, I think, had an appointment or something at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So it just worked out. So we're going to talk to Droy Murdoch about how much winning can one individual voter handle. Well, we'll ask Droy Murdoch that question, see if he's sick of winning quite yet. Are you sick of winning? Let us go to the YouTube live chat poll here real quick as well. I haven't mentioned this on the show. I think Ryan mentioned it in a time check in the 12 o'clock hour. But on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can go to the live chat on the live broadcast right now. Do you support eliminating the Department of Education? Yes, no, or you're not really sure, but I do trust Trump. Those are your three options. Go there and vote. Tell us what you think.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to the
pool. Every one of your people knows Elon, 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 Elon. Listen. Everybody keeps, the problem is you have a framework in your mind that how can Donald Trump? Guys, can we cut it out? Donald Trump is not an idiot. Donald Trump, let me just be very clear. Donald Trump is smarter than me, you, and all critics. You know how I know? Because he has the White House, the Senate, the House.
Totally agree.
Support, the popular vote. He has a massive media ecosystem bigger than the mainstream built around him and for him, and a religious fervor in a political movement around him. And he, his best buddy, is the richest person in the history of the world, and the most relevant Kennedy is with him. This dude is a phenomenon. He is the most powerful human on Earth and in our lifetime, and we're still saying, well, how is this guy? We look like idiots to ordinary
people. You're totally right.
That's Van Jones just putting it all out there right now, really recognizing this moment in time. And we've talked about this, but the Democrats and their reaction to this moment, and they're pulling their hair out. They can't believe the breakneck pace with which Donald Trump is working to make America great again and putting America first. It seems to me like Van Jones probably gets it. Let's find out what Droy Murdoch thinks about that on a Tuesday afternoon. Nationally syndicated columnist, Project 21 ambassador, and Fox News contributor. Droy, welcome back. What do you think about Van Jones's assessment there of our president?
Well, I think Van Jones is right. The funny thing is Van Jones is not a man of the right. He's a man of the left, and yet he seems to have a pretty realistic understanding of the really dire situation in which the Democrats find themselves. They're just completely outflanked, outpaced, outcrafted and outshined by Trump at almost every turn. And in return, they don't seem to have any clear sense of where to go. They just elected a guy named Ken Martin as the head of the Democrat National Committee. Oddly enough, they put a white male heterosexual in to run the DNC. Imagine that. And his view is that basically everything's great, that Biden did a great job. They've done nothing wrong, and they just need to go out and you know, pitch even more left-wing ideas, and that's going to be their path back to power. So, you know, go ahead, do that sort of thing. I think they'll make themselves even less relevant than they are now, which is, at the moment, not that relevant.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching some polling coming back right now, and it doesn't seem like the Democrats have yet to make their case, and it's, you know, Donald Trump's been president for a few weeks once again, but he's been anticipated to be so since November of last year when he won the election. I don't know that the Democrats have really gotten some footing yet on who they are going to be in contrast to Donald Trump as the president of the United States.
Well, I think that's part of it. And you know, maybe to give them a little bit of credit, I suppose, I sent an email to a friend of mine who's in the administration. This was about 24 hours ago after Canada said that it was going to cave into the pressure from the White House and put 10,000 troops on the northern border. Mexico said they're going to put 10,000 of their troops on the southern border and cooperate with immigration and whatnot. And I just wrote, "Dear John, colon, I am sick of winning, Deroy." Every 2 hours is something else. I mean, I'm going to write an op-ed about this. I wrote down like 12 or 13 things between now and about 10 o'clock in the morning. And since then, this is literally since 10 a.m., I've added Denmark is going to increase U.S. military presence in Greenland. Let's see, El Salvador has agreed to take not just El Salvador and violent criminals are going to take people from any country who we want to send down there. Apparently they're preparing a memo or an executive order to abolish the Department of Education. That's been literally like the last 4 hours. So, I mean, you can't keep up with the pace of stuff that's happening. And, you know, it's each one is sort of like a conservative dream come true. And I'm sure that the people on the left are just not knowing what to do because they just can't keep up with this incredible, unbelievable pace of change.
Deroy, what is it about Donald Trump that is so effective in getting these outcomes?
You know, I just think it goes to show what a little bit of leadership will do. When you are know what you want to do, you have a plan to do it, and you execute on it, and you surround yourself with intelligent, equally energetic people and say, okay, on your marks, get set, go. It's just been one thing after another. And unlike Joe Biden, who spent 40% of his presidency on vacation, this man seems like he gets up at 7 in the morning, he goes to sleep at about 5 a.m., and in those intervening 22 hours, he just works nonstop. He's got the executive orders going, and he's got statements. And today, meeting, or I think it's actually, yeah, I think it is today, meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. There doesn't seem to be a moment where the man is not working very hard to deliver on exactly the promises that he made to American people. And another thing is nobody should be surprised by anything he's doing. I mean, everything he's done, it's like, well, he ran on it. He talked about it over and over on the campaign trail. So, you know, none of this stuff should surprise anybody. This is his campaign agenda, and he got elected. And now he's turning his campaign agenda into public policy.
Yeah, this is what we voted for. If you voted for Donald Trump, he said what he was going to do, and he's getting right to it.
He's doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Deroy Murdoch speaking with us right now. You know, we kind of talked about this a little bit in the beginning of our show today, but you have to hear Joe Biden's name to remember that he even existed. It's not taken very long at all for us to really be in this new way of especially news reporting and discussion here on a radio talk show. But when I think about whatever this Trump administration does, to me, there's no doubt that it all funnels through Donald Trump, that he is the final say on all of the things that are coming through his administration. And what makes me a little bit nervous is I fear that Joe Biden was the buck stopper on none of it. So whatever that entity was that was those last 4 years, it still exists somewhere, maybe in the shadows in the swamp. But how do we know that that way of thinking, the Biden administration way of thinking, isn't waiting to rear its ugly head once again, should maybe we lose the House or something in the midterms or potentially the presidency in the next 4 years?
Oh, that's absolutely a risk. Look, just because Trump is winning like crazy right now doesn't mean the left is just going to, you know, go away and hide, or they're suddenly going to become mega and join us. I mean, some people have. Obviously, Tulsi Gabbard has done so, and RFK Jr. has done so. Some people might think, okay, it's better to switch than to fight, I imagine. But there are a lot of people who believe this crazy left-wing stuff, and a lot of them are out there saying, you know, the reason that Kamala Harris lost the election was that she wasn't hardcore left-wing enough, and so they need to double and triple and quadruple down on the transgender nonsense, on the global warming chaos, massive spending, huge regulation, censorship, and so on. And from what I can gather from, if you watch the Democrat National Committee select its new leaders over the weekend, I didn't hear anything about tax cuts. I didn't hear anything about school choice. I didn't hear anything about deregulation. I heard a lot about DEI. I heard a lot about gender. There are a couple of absolutely comical moments where they kind of went through the voting rules. And they said, well, you know, for the next person we're voting for, you can vote for one man, one woman, one person of either gender,
yeah.
or a non-binary person. But then if it's non-binary, I mean, they got slipped up. I mean, the guy who was speaking had to stop and bring some woman in to explain it. She got the middle of her thing and she got tripped up. She couldn't. So these people, they're not even able to follow
write
their nonsense.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like a giant comedy sketch, except it's called the Democrat Party.
Yeah. And fortunately, it's in the, like I said earlier in the show, they're playing in the loser bracket right now, which is fine with me. You know, mm-hmm. I was thinking about the tariffs, the tariff conversation surrounding Donald Trump. He loves tariffs. He's told us leading up to the election, the campaign, he said I remember him saying something like, it's the most beautiful word, tariff. And now we're seeing him do it in action. He applies tariffs in the morning. They're off because he gets what he wants by the evening. And it's working mm-hmm. wonderfully, at least thus far. And I can't help but notice that the left incrementally is freaking out about the cost of goods going up under tariffs. Now, all of a sudden, they care that things are going mm-hmm. to cost more than they did before. Where was that the last 4 years or even the last 20 years where they were willing to ask us to change our entire lifestyle and the cost of everything on behalf of their virtuous climate change, which is why we always had to pay more things? Why do they all of a sudden care about the cost of goods and attaching that to tariffs?
I think the only thing is that they think they can hurt Trump by saying, oh, he's making costs more expensive and making the country less affordable. You know, they had their Green New Deal and Build Back Better and all the various massive spending programs. They never talked about, gee, this might cost people some money. That never came up. And I think this was it was 3 or 4 days after Trump got in, sometime last week or the week before that, somebody said, well, you've been in office and prices aren't coming down. I mean, it's not even a week. I mean, come on, you need a little bit of time for this stuff to kick in.
Yeah.
Astonishing. But yeah, they didn't talk much about prices or increased costs. You know, remember, inflation was transitory and mm-hmm. probably a hallucination. We didn't know how good we had it. And now Trump is in it. So they're screaming screaming from a different hymnal, saying, oh, you know, he's increasing prices and Trump is the cause of inflation. Rather an opportunistic, if not totally hypocritical approach on the part of the Democrats.
Last question before we let you go. We're speaking with DeRoy Murdoch, Fox News contributor, nationally syndicated columnist and Project 21 ambassador. One of the biggest criticisms of the first go around, the first term of Donald Trump, was the people he surrounded himself by. He didn't know what he didn't know. And apparently he didn't know a lot. Lessons learned. Compared to me, the selection of people he surrounded himself this time and the people who he's put into a position to advise him and to help him that he can delegate to compared to the first term.
I think in the first term, he two things. One is he was new to government. And I think he basically thought, well, these people have experience. Let's bring them in. You know, so-and-so has been recommended by such-and-such. So put this person into a big position, Rex Tillerson at the State Department, for example. And a lot of these people just didn't share his views. Some of them I don't think were terribly personally crazy about him. And I think a lot of these people either dragged their feet when it came to implementing his ideas, or they actually sabotage things by leaking stories or cooperating with the other side or whatever it might be. I think the people who are there now are people he knows, people he trusts, people who really believe in the America First agenda. And so we're not going to lose a lot of time and effort fighting internally with people who are in the White House or in the various agencies that president controls. And instead, we'll be able to focus our attention on people on the outside, people on the left, the Democrats who are getting in the way. So I think part of the reason he's having so much success now is he's got people who are in the boat rowing in the same direction rather than in the boat rowing in the opposite direction. That's a big, big difference, and a very positive one.
Look at how fast they're going as well. That's for sure.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
All right, DeRoy, I know you're sick of winning, but I'll talk to you next week and hope you're equally as sick of winning next week.
I'll be even more sick of winning next week.
We got so much time ahead of us. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Take care.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
All right, bye-bye. DeRoy Murdoch, nationally syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, Project 21 ambassador. Check out Project 21 if you haven't yet. I think you'll be entertained by many of the people who are involved in that really awesome project. Great to talk to DeRoy on a Tuesday, and he's absolutely right. Like, the amount of winning, if you voted for this, that you feel right now is just kind of, it's hard to take it all in. You feel like you're going to miss things because so much is happening. Conversely, the people who voted very much so knowingly against the things that Donald Trump said he was going to do, they're not doing so great right now. And my hope and prayer is genuinely that they come around to see why these policies are better than what we were doing before. I think the idea, I That I don't do this very often, but I might go back and listen to that conversation with Jim Carafano once again, because his comments on USAID and how our money has been paraded through these NGOs, these entities that are in existence to help other people, but what it turns out is they're really just money gobblers, taxpayer gobblers that don't utilize the position they're in to actually perform aid that is best for the people who they're performing it for. That's frustrating. That's frustrating to learn. It's also really not terribly surprising, but Secretary of State Marco Rubio, now in charge of USAID, and that conversation with Jim Carafano at the beginning of the 1 o'clock hour, very interesting to hear his perspective on that, and really straight talk on how ineffective USAID and these other, air quotes, charitable organizations with your money, what kind of good they're doing, and in converse, what kind of bad they're actually doing. All right, let's get Ryan Wiggins back in the studio. We'll allow it. YouTube live chat poll. Do you support eliminating the Department of Education? Donald Trump is dancing around this conversation right now, floating it out there. And usually he does this and then he takes some sort of action in the near future. Is the Department of Education on the chopping block? That's a big one, don't you think? What do you think? Do you want to see it? Do you want to see it gone? Yes, no, or you're not really sure, but you do trust Trump. Annie Fry YouTube channel in the live chat. Go vote in the poll. We'll be right back. Gotta take a deep breath. Time to focus. Well, Ryan, I know how big of a David Hogg fan you are.
I'm a hogger.
That's what they call themselves.
Mm-hmm. We call ourselves.
Yeah. That and...
Yeah.
Doug Burgum. It's a weird intersection of affinity.
What was the Doug Burgum one?
I don't know.
I think it was Burgumites.
You said, yeah. You were in the fan club.
Yeah.
I think an officer in it.
I was a treasury secretary in the Burgumites.
The treasury secretary.
Yeah, I was the secretary of the interior of the Burgumites, which ended up being so ironic.
You got to explain that on your resume.
Yeah, it's hard.
So are you saying you're the Secretary of Interior? Well, no, not exactly.
No, I was the Secretary of the Interior for the eventual Secretary of the Interior. But by the time he got that position, I had been demoted.
One of the posts that David Hogg put on X/Twitter. When did Musk buy it? What year?
22.
Well, this is in April of 2022. So I don't know if this was Elon Musk Twitter or X, or if it was not whoever owned it. What was it? No, who owned it before?
Jack Dorsey.
No, not Jack Dorsey. Oh. He wasn't in charge when Elon Musk
there was
got
like
it.
There was an interim group. I think Jack Dorsey was still involved, but he wasn't the main
owner. He was like an advisor, but he was embarrassed by them.
Yeah.
We get it. This is what he put on in April of 2022. Quote, regarding his thoughts and opinions on politics. How radical, you ask? I don't think anybody should have over $1 billion in assets. There should be 100% tax after your first billion. I think we need to do what Australia did in regards to guns. We need universal health care, free college for all, legalize all drugs.
Yeah, okay.
That's the Democratic Party. I go back to the statistic that I said at the beginning of maybe the beginning of the show, where I was talking about how unpopular the Democratic Party is. There is a 57% unfavorable rating right now of the Democratic Party, according to a Quinnipiac poll from January.
Wow.
57% say mm-mm.
That's unusually high.
Favorable, 31%.
That's unusually low for them.
But the party sucks, so...
You ask what exactly do they stand for, and if you take Donald Trump out of the conversation, the answer would be
exactly with that.
What?
Well, what David Hogg just said. That's who they just voted for.
Oh, I see. I see the connection. Yeah. Good job. You're professional.
Welcome. Come to the exterior.
You do a great job. There are times that I'm listening to the show and I'm like, dang, that was a good point. I wish I could comment, but... Oh, I can. Wait.
Is it during Wiggins America?
No. I actually thought, I'll tell you the truth. During the monologue today, during the opening of the show, you tied together the Democrats asking you to raise costs for the sake of everyone for climate change to yesterday's freak out over something that had not actually raised any prices for a different, better cause. And said, why is one better than the other? I love that. I thought that was very good. You should get the podcast if you don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not 100% sure what you're talking about.
You didn't plan that?
Are you talking about me saying that when government asks you to spend more money, that if the Democrats say, you need to spend more money, it's the right thing to do. We need to save the planet. Climate change. We're supposed to all nod and go, here's my money.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And when Donald Trump says, you might have to spend more money, if they're not going to work with us and make good deals that benefit the American people, then it might cost you a little bit more money to buy crap from China. And we're not supposed to say, okay, take my money. And then he puts the tariffs on our neighboring countries, and they're like, we don't want tariffs, at least not for 30 days. And then the prices don't go up. Imagine if you bought maple syrup yesterday, just like in the window.
Mm-hmm. It would have been like buying, you know, a 40-pack of toilet paper in February of 2020.
Buy low, sell high.
Exactly.
I'm sitting on something big here.
And you never know. You never really know, do you?
No. What's your favorite Canadian good?
Bacon.
That's not even true. Canadian bacon sucks.
I like Canadian bacon. I like it better than regular ham on pizza.
What about actual bacon?
I don't love actual bacon on pizza.
I'm not. Nobody entered pizza into the chat.
I did.
No, you can't. You did midstream. There is no pizza.
Yeah, but that's the way I consume these goods.
Canadian bacon versus bacon versus American Southern Illinois pig bacon.
Yeah.
You going Trudeau?
No, you just convinced me.
Bacon. Bacon.
Yeah, you take pizza out of the equation.
This goes back to your McDonald's.
I'd rather
hamburger.
Have actual bacon on a pizza. See Emo's.
I would not. Unless they're long strips of bacon. If they're crumbled up bacon, I don't really like that as much. It changes the texture too much of the pizza.
To what?
Crunchy. I don't want a crunchy
pizza.
You want
soft?
I do. I like New York style a lot. Yeah, soft pizza. I like everything I eat to be nice and soft, like an old man. I can just gum it.
There, we went too far. I had a chance to rein it in, and I missed my opportunity.
Yes, you did. It's really on you. You can see it coming by the look in my eye.
The best thing coming out of Canada is Canadian bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Brad?
This is going to be really in the weeds, but it's
Shania Twain.
It's an
Mike Myers.
Not bad. No, Bieber. It's an exhaust system company, MBRP. They make great sounding exhaust systems, but not everybody's going to like that. But that's my favorite thing out of Canada.
Ryan?
So they like, what does an exhaust do?
It takes the exhaust out of your engine and puts it outside your car. So it
like it sucks up the car's farts.
What?
And it puts them somewhere else.
You just call those carts.
Annie?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. You're the one talking about exhaust systems here.
Yeah, it's a performance exhaust system. I think they sound great.
Annie, I think that actually was a terrific answer to your question. It was so specific that he knew that thing was made in Canada.
And then you asked him, what does an exhaust do? Mm-hmm. And then you talked about farts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been great.
I didn't have anything to add to his great answer. And I just had shame. In response to yours.
I understand. I think a lot of people who are associated with me feel that way.
Regular syrup or maple syrup?
Maple.
Every time, right?
Absolutely. But you don't have to get that from Canada. That's what's tough.
I don't know that you do. I get mine from Walgreens. And it's the off-brand. And I don't know that it's... I don't know. I've never really looked into it. But I have maple syrup that I... If we have any type of breakfast thing or whatever, I go with maple syrup. Everybody else has got the whatever you call Aunt Jemima now in the pantry.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the last month, I think it was my 8-year-old Evelyn goes, Mom, when did you first find out you liked maple syrup? And I was like, I don't know. And then later on, I was thinking about it. I'm like, I know exactly the answer to this question. Cracker Barrel.
Oh, the little hot bottles. Those are so good.
That syrup tastes different. It's maple syrup, right?
It is, and they heat it up, and it's, oh gosh. I don't know what it is about that. It's so good.
There's not, I don't know about all the other breakfast places out there, but maple syrup doesn't seem like it's standard issue other places the way that it is. Like, if you're getting a breakfast at Cracker Barrel, you're getting maple syrup with it.
Yeah, you can tell when it's fake. Either fake or it's somewhat fake, because some of them have some maple syrup in it and they kind of add to it.
Like a flavor, yeah.
Yeah, but the faker it is, the more gooey it is.
Because maple syrup is pretty runny.
Maple syrup is, it's kind of thin.
Versus what you would get from Aunt Jemima is really thick and sticky and all that type of stuff.
I told Brad this yesterday. In 2012, I don't know if I told you the full context of it, because we were talking about maple syrup. but in 2012.
We have off air.
Yeah. Katie and I, we were about to have kids. We're like, let's take an international vacation. Oh, wait, we can't afford an international vacation. How about let's go to Canada? And so that's the only time.
Is that not international?
Well, I guess overseas is what we're thinking. International is correct. But we thought.
Guess what, Katie?
Actually,
we can do it.
We were talking about taking a, let me clarify, a European vacation.
Yeah, that's different.
And we said, well, we can't afford a European vacation.
Also international. As is Canada.
Yes. How about if we go to French Canada and make it feel like it's Europe? And it actually worked. Mm-hmm. It was a lot cheaper to do, and it was a lot of fun. We went in the summer. And one of the things we did while we were there is we took a little tour. We were up near Quebec City, and they have this little island, I can't remember the name of it, in the St. Lawrence River that is all artisan, and there's a lot of maple syrup made there. So we got to go through and see the process for how they make maple syrup and all of everything that goes into it. And they just hook these spigots up to these trees, and it just that water just drips out of those trees into these little lines or buckets, however they do it. And then it's amazing to me how much of that maple water it takes to get one bottle of maple syrup. That's why it's so expensive, because it takes like two or three buckets of this stuff to boil down into one little bitty jar of maple syrup.
You ever had poutine?
Well, while we were there, we tried to stop and get it, and the place had closed right before we walked up, and so we never got it.
I blame Trudeau.
You blame him that we didn't get it at that time?
No, that the place closed. Do you mean for the night or for good? Everything I know about Canada, other than maple syrup, is from Canada and Epcot.
Uh-huh. Now, the one thing they did sell there, and I think they probably sell these in Vermont and some of the northern New England, is a little candy. And, Dad, if you're listening, I want this more often for Christmas. He used to get them for me. They're these little maple candies that they, so they boil it down to maple syrup. Then they boil it down again to like a there's
like a
something,
taffy or like a, yeah, like a caramel would be, but maple?
Yeah, there's something in between when they, between syrup and this candy, because it's like, yeah, it's kind of taffy-ish.
Butter?
I can't remember. But once they get it all the way down to this candy, it's like buckets and buckets and buckets of this maple water go into one little bitty piece of candy because they have to condense it so much. But it is so good. It's like maple sugar. And when you put it in your mouth, it's not hard candy, but it's hard enough to hold. When you put it in your mouth, it dissolves in your mouth. And it is so good. And it is 100% pure. And it's got to be expensive, because that's one of the only times I've had it, like, in person was right there in Canada. But my dad did find it from Vermont. And, Dad, Christmas. I want more of those.
You just had a moment.
I did.
He had his eyes closed when he was talking about it.
Oh, I mean, those things were so good. I was so surprised.
Wipe your mouth a little bit.
Sorry.
I just think that the tariff... I said this yesterday, I'll say this again. People were freaking out about tariffs on both sides of the aisle a bit more than other particular issues. I also understand that we're 3 weeks into this, so maybe things take a turn down the road and something happens and it's not what we think is the best and he's got to change course or whatever. But I don't know why it's difficult to look at the tariff question and say, he's using it as a negotiating tool. And if tariffs are going to inflict pain economically on the, it's, as I understand it, the products that are being made elsewhere, why that wouldn't ultimately, I mean, if people want more than anything to get into the American market, why would you not use that to your advantage so that you have a fair reciprocal relationship? And if we're not being treated fairly, obviously there are things that these countries, one after the other, feel that maybe they do need to do a solid towards the American government and the American people, because Donald Trump says, I need you to take these people. And they're like, no. And he's like, fine. And they're like, okay. I mean, like, this happens in the course of hours of time. I just trust Donald Trump. And I'm not really a trusting person. I don't trust government. But everything he's doing right now, it seems to be working. And I don't know how long it can stay that way, but it just seems to be working. The YouTube poll, do you support eliminating the Department of Education? Brad, any major thoughts on this right away?
Yeah, I am 100% in favor of this. I think that there's nothing that the Federal Department of Education does that couldn't be handled better at the state or local level. So done with that. I mean, let's get rid of it. Move on. It's not doing what it's supposed to do.
Ryan?
I am actually a yes on this, but if it's right now, I'm a no. I don't think that this should be day number whatever, third week priority.
Why?
I think that this is intertwined a little bit too much. And maybe they've already done all this background work because they knew, hey, we got elected. So if that's the case, then that's the case.
I don't think that they just thought of this idea on Monday.
I don't either. I just want to make sure there's so many things that the Department of Education could do from a federal level that could actually be good.
Like
that. I want to make sure we're not punting on those things. And this is stuff Trump's talked about, so possibly he's already doing it. But funding school districts that are pushing full choice. He said that. I want to make sure that doesn't have to happen through the Department of Education. Apparently, he's got another way to do it.
Let's talk more about it in the next hour. We need your thoughts and your comments as well on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. So go to youtube.com/@AnnieFry and vote if you support eliminating the Department of Education. Yes, no, or you're not sure, but you trust Trump. You can leave your vote there, and we will discuss in the 2 o'clock hour. Don't go away.
You want to retire soon, but everyone can.